Matt Harrison, Chris Rosebro, Aaron Wolf, Peter Bender, Todd Peppercorn, and Terry Mattingly will be speaking at the 2017 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th in Collinsville, Illinois, about 15 miles east of St. Louis. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 9th and 10th in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org. There are places in the world where being a Christian is illegal. Now, it might not automatically wind you up in prison, although it certainly could. It might just take the form, say in the case of China, where prison is certainly a possibility, simply having your preaching edited by the local Communist Party, or your building has to be registered along with your pastor and everyone who is a member of your church. There is even, in Communist China, a patriotic church where all those things are done willingly. All those things are done with the cooperation of the church. And then the vast majority of Christians, they practice their religion underground, out of sight of the local authorities. We're going to talk about religious persecution in China and a interesting scientific theory that posits that religion was the key to humans' social evolution. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery joins us on this Wednesday afternoon. He's emeritus professor at the University of Bedfordshire in England. He's a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States, director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, and author and editor of more than 50 books, including Giant in Chains, China Today and Tomorrow. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
Why has the Chinese government been traditionally hostile toward religion in general and Christianity in particular?
Well, if you're talking about the current Chinese government, it's a communist government, and because the position that official communism has taken is atheistic, naturally the state has been not at all friendly toward religious believers, and it isn't just Christians. They've been very, very difficult with other religious positions in China. If you go back historically, the biggest problem certainly was at the period of exploration, 16th, 17th century, when China was opened up to the West, and the Chinese got the impression that the West was attempting to force Western values on China, and they associated Christianity with that sort of thing. The missionaries, of course, did everything they possibly could to prevent that impression from prevailing, but there's no doubt about the fact that a Chinese nationalism or regionalism had a great deal to do with problems that missionaries had in China.
You mentioned before that communism is atheistic. What kind of presuppositions does that communist ideal have about religion, and I guess they would say is harmful to a communist society? Why does it threaten communist society?
Well, here you have to go back to Marxist theory. In Marxist theory, everything is determined by materialistic economic factors, and therefore ideological positions such as religions are not fundamental to the development of society. They are in the superstructure. That's the technical term that you used. They're in the superstructure, and what they tend to do is to distort the position that should be taken. That is to say, these religions give the impression that there really is something more important than materialistic economic considerations, and therefore they ought to be opposed. If they're not opposed, then people may very well slip into that kind of perspective and not go along with the economic reforms and other activities that are based on that kind of theory.
So let's talk about what kind of restrictions are put on religious believers and on Christian churches in communist China. There is something called the Patriotic Church, which appears to have more leeway and freedom than other Christian bodies in China?
Well, the distinction exists between the official churches, those that are government recognized, and those that aren't. And the government recognized churches are those where the government is able to exercise a fair amount of political control over what goes on. But far more Christian believers in China are members of house churches, informal Christian groupings that are not registered with the government. And it's too difficult for the government to extirpate these, though the government would very much like to do so. So the problem is to decide, if you are a Christian in China, whether you want to have some kind of recognized church operation. And if you do, that operation very definitely is under political control. Okay? The alternative is a more informal kind of worship, which doesn't connect denominationally.
And would that be what we would call, say, underground churches?
Oh, yes. Yes, exactly. They are, for all practical purposes, underground. And it's a terribly difficult situation. You also have to understand that the government of China is a totalitarian government. Now, totalitarianism goes along very well with Marxism, but it doesn't have to. Any government, any political system can become totalitarian. A totalitarian system is one that insists on controlling all aspects of life, or as much as they possibly can, of the activities of the populace. And that has been a defining characteristic of Chinese Marxism. They don't want to let any area of life operate independently. They are frightened witless that that could produce an upset that would remove them from power. This was the reason for the Tiananmen Square massacre. The students who protested were not trying to overthrow the government at all. All they wanted was an opportunity for greater freedom of expression. But this was not going to be allowed. The government's approach to this was to eliminate the protesters. And, you know, totalitarianism is a very interesting phenomenon because it doesn't have to connect with atheism. It doesn't have to connect with communism. There are Protestant churches that are totalitarian, really. They're churches that will not allow any deviation from the party line, and they try to suppress any ideas that would seem to threaten headquarters. And in my view, this is a frightening phenomenon wherever you find it.
So let's talk a little bit about efforts being made between the Chinese government and the Vatican. I take it that Pope Francis has expressed a desire to visit China, but also the Vatican has been working on trying to get the ordination of Roman Catholic bishops in the country. What can you tell us about this, and how hopeful are you of that kind of effort?
Well, this is really interesting because it parallels the conflicts between the emperor and the pope in the Western Middle Ages. In the Western Middle Ages, of course, the pope wanted to control the church, and the emperor also wanted to control the church. And this came to a head at the point of appointing church officials. And so the question was, who had the final authority for appointing officials? If you look at the history of the medieval church, you see that many of the conflicts between the papacy and the empire had to do with exactly that. And this is the situation in China. The government wants to be able to appoint bishops, or at least ensure that the bishops will follow the party line, that there won't be any opposition, there won't be any prophetic claims against the country, no claims of human rights violations or anything like that. But, of course, the Pope, being the head of the Roman Catholic Church, wants to be sure that the bishops are aligned with traditional Catholicism. So right now the conflict comes at the point of determining whether or not the Roman Church can make suggestions, but the final decision rests with the Chinese government, or the reverse. And the obvious approach that the papacy is taking is, we are perfectly willing to listen to your suggestions, but we need to have a final veto on those suggestions. And the papacy is convinced that in a situation like that, eventually they're going to be the church is going to be able to get people in whom they have confidence.
How hopeful are you of that actually working out, where the Chinese government would permit the free ordination of Roman Catholic bishops in China?
I'm not very hopeful, and one of the reasons is that the central Chinese government has been grinding down on Hong Kong in recent months, to the point where the original agreement was that after Hong Kong went back to China, that there would be a 50-year period in which Western government as it existed in Hong Kong would continue without any problems. And the fact is that the Chinese government is placing more and more pressure on Hong Kong to control the elections that take place there, to control the mayoral elections and the elections to the legislature. There's a mini legislature there, that kind of thing. And my contacts, people, scholars in Hong Kong, are really worried. They think that there's every likelihood that Hong Kong is just going to be absorbed into mainland China. And, of course, that will lead to the great detriment of mainland China, because Hong Kong has been a marvelous economic center, and it would lose that. Okay, if the Chinese government is even willing to put the heat on Hong Kong, when the Chinese government, of course, is in favor of economic advance, I don't think that the Chinese government is going to make things very easy for the Roman Catholic Church. I think the in any totalitarian regime, the only way that the situation does not completely go in the direction of the government is that there are counterbalancing pressures, and there really aren't counterbalancing pressures. The U.S. Has preferred to stay off of questions like human rights violations and all that kind of thing in order to increase trade with China. And I think that that is a very, very grave mistake. I think that Western nations, if they really put pressure on China, could force the government to relax a lot of the restrictions that exist for the sake of the economic advantages that would come that way. But that hasn't been the West's approach to this.
So when we look at the total Christian population, it has to be estimated, of course, in China, we're talking about anywhere from 75 to 100 million Christians, speaking generally there. That's second only to Chinese Buddhists in China. Why does the
Yes, in Christian evangelism, internal evangelism increases in its effectiveness all the time. I mean, the Christian church in China is a growing operation even in the absence of Western missionaries.
Talk about some historical perspective outside the scope of China, just on the fact that Christians in many places in the world today and throughout the history of Christendom have had to live from time to time with an illegal status, essentially, attached to them.
Oh, this is right. This is true. Because ultimately, you know, we have only one citizenship, and that's in heaven. By the way, By the way, if we went back behind the current communist regime, we would be in the history of Imperial China. And one of the points that I made in my book, Giant in Chains, is that there really wasn't any last emperor, because China, through its history, had always had a centralized imperial focus. And when the empire technically ended, that didn't mean that the perspective ceased. The perspective is continued in communist China. The leadership there operates very much as the emperors did. They just don't put up with opposition.
There are those who say that the approach of the United States and other Western countries to China in terms of human rights violations is probably the best way to go, because eventually, the market being what it is, a billion people in China, communist government will eventually have to compromise on human rights just in order to take advantage of, and in a lot of ways, to survive economically. Do you buy that reasoning?
Not especially. This is sort of the approach that was taken at Munich with Adolf Hitler. This was Chamberlain's approach at Munich. The idea is to be nice to the dictator, and eventually there will be so much pressure from below that the whole thing will fall apart. Well, it didn't, and I'm not sure that there is any good historical evidence that that's the way things change. I don't believe that the Berlin Wall would have ever fallen if there hadn't been staggering Western pressure against the USSR.
Dr. John Warren Montgomery is our guest. When we return, we are going to turn to a scientific theory that purports that religion was key to human social evolution, and see what Dr. Montgomery thinks about it. That's right after this.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Expert guests. Expansive topics. Extolling Christ. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Daily worship, historical hymnody, and catechesis interwoven with direct instruction in phonics, traditional math, literature, grammar, history, Latin, and strings. It's part of our daily life at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois, the only classical Lutheran school in Greater St. Louis. We're located 1 mile off Interstate 55. For more information, visit school.stpaulhamel.org. We would love to share our joy in learning with your child. school.stpaulhamel.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. John Warren Montgomery is our guest. Returning from the issue of religious persecution in China to Dr. Montgomery, there's a scientific theory that has been recently published that religion was the key to human social evolution. What do you make of this theory?
Well, every once in a while, non-Christians come up with a nice thing to say about religion, that after all, it really has helped in one way or another. So, if you're an evolutionist, you really have a problem with the fact that human beings, left to themselves, enjoy eating each other. So how is it that civilization has arisen to the point where people are not eating each other, and there really are an awfully lot of nice things going on? And so, looking around, the evolutionist says, well, after all, religion is against people eating each other, and people who have religious convictions have a remarkable record historically of being nice people and helping civilization to advance. My view of this kind of thing is, A, it does not deal with the truth question at all. And that's what's really important. The important question is a religion, any given religion, true or false? And along with that, is evolutionary theory such a scientifically established fact that one can assume its truth and then judge the value of a religion in terms of whether it had some sort of influence in the evolutionary process? Now, if one were to ask those truth questions and check out the evidence, this is what one would find. One would find that evolutionary theory is a very interesting philosophical notion, but very definitely does not have the kind of empirical scientific foundation to make it a normative approach to other phases of life. Okay, and if one takes a look at religions, one would find that most of them are unable to support any truth claims. But in the case of Christianity, Christianity can very definitely do this. Christianity can show that, as a matter of fact, Jesus Christ was not just a prophet. He was God Almighty. He claimed to be such, and he fulfilled hundreds of Old Testament prophecies, and he rose again from the dead, performed remarkable miracles. John the Baptist's followers came to him and said, "Are you the one?" And Jesus said, "Take a look at what's been going on and see what you think." And therefore, it is possible to establish the truth of a religious claim. And once that's established, it seems to me the whole atmosphere changes. Then we're no longer asking, is this philosophical idea, this religious idea, helpful in dealing with evolution? The question then becomes something very different. It's, if Christianity is true, if Jesus really did die on the cross, rise again from the dead, ascend into heaven, and will be coming back, and the biblical material is true, if all of that's the case, then shouldn't we try to reevaluate our approach to evolution?
So the fact remains here, Dr. Montgomery, that the evolutionist has to, he must, explain why religion exists. He must give it an evolutionary rationale, and it sounds like this is just the latest of trying to explain the existence of something apart from the fact that, in the case of Christianity, the things that Christians believe actually occurred.
Well, sure. What the evolutionist does is to assume that his position is correct, and then he wants to find some way of dealing with religious questions. And in this particular instance, he is being awfully nice to religionists and pointing out that religion has indeed reduced the number of people eating each other. But it doesn't seem to me that this gets at the heart of anything. The real question is, for example, why is it that people want to eat each other? Why are people so nasty to each other? Well, that's a moral question, and the evolutionist has never been able to answer this at all, whereas the Christian faith answers it by saying that it's because people are inherently selfish and they need to be saved. And the way to get saved is through the cross of Jesus Christ.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is emeritus professor at the University of Bedfordshire in England. He's a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, and author and editor of more than 50 books, including Giant in Chains, China Today, and Tomorrow. You can purchase his books and find out more about the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, held annually in Strasbourg, France, at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Montgomery, thank you so much for your time.
You're most welcome.
We'll be looking forward to Sunday morning, according to the three-year lectionary on the other side of the break on this Wednesday, March the 1st. First Sunday in Lent, we'll be walking through the account of the fall, of Paul's take on the fall in Romans chapter 5, and Matthew 4, The Temptation of Jesus. Dr. Carl Fikancher will be our guest right after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.